This is Rapholix After Hours.
Welcome everybody to Rack Addicts After Hours, episode 59. This week, just Pete and I again, but most excitingly, we're both coming to you through the wonderful Shure SM7B. Delicious. Using two varieties of line booster, the Triton Audio FET head, the regular version, not the germanium for me, and cloud microphones, cloud lifter on Pete's end. Obviously it's not both voices interchangeably in a nice demo, but cast your votes on the Rack Addicts UK Facebook page. Who's got the nicest, smoothest microphone this week? I'm actually also in a bit of a pillow fort, actually, enshrouded by duvet and slowly roasting, as I said to Pete earlier, hotter than the surface of the sun. I'm sure Luke will fact check me on that, but I am slowly melting. And it's been absolutely thrilling weeks from both of us. I uploaded some files to the internet. Pete, you had a pretty exciting event occur in your household.
Yeah, I hoovered the stairs.
What thrilling lives we lead. Those files I uploaded, my internet's so crap. You have to beep that one. Excuse me. My internet is so terrible that it would have taken 13 hours for 4 and change gigabytes. So I drove to the office and did it in 17 minutes instead, and then drove back again. I hate this internet. It's so terrible.
I mean, there's nothing you can do about it apart from move.
I need to. I'm not renting this place for another year purely because of the internet. It's absolutely catastrophic.
So, I mean, it is the number one question that should be asked.
Yeah, and I didn't even consider it, and now I'm kicking myself in the face every time I try and do anything.
What one doesn't normally expect to be in an internet not spot in the middle of a major town on the outskirts of London. You'd expect them to have the full bifter, as I like to say.
Yeah, and to make matters worse, I think, what are we talking, 10 metres from our front door, there is a BT fibre box. It just doesn't get to our building. Absolute nightmare. Yeah.
And it's are they relatively new flats?
Recently.
So quite a relatively new development. But
yeah, we're the first people in here.
Didn't see fit to actually extend the fibre to your address.
What will we do? I know what we'll do. We'll jump into some synthy news, and then later some slightly less synthy, but still very much musical, technical stuff. Because Pete's got some stuff that he wants to talk about. We love it. Before we jump into that, because this is sort of related to our first one, obviously everybody at this point is familiar with crowdfunding, Indiegogo, Kickstarter, GoFundMe, the usual thing. While I personally haven't kickstarted GoFundMe'd or Indiegogo'd any goes before, there are a bunch of products that I'm following, a similar kind of thing, you know, one person jobby startup. They made a prototype and it's been shouted out a bit, and then you've kind of signed up for their waitlist, and then they don't exist anymore. The first of which I've definitely mentioned on the podcast before, and now prepare for me to butcher the Norwegian pronunciation, Fjellet. It is FJ, that weird A and the E that are squished together, RLEtt. It's that spring reverb EQ feedback machine, which you can now get with an audio input and use it as a regular spring reverb. I think I mentioned this before because a good while after I signed up to the waitlist, if you sign up for the waitlist now, it says, "I'm very sorry, but due to outstanding demand, the waitlist is now 5 years long." Catastrophic. I'm still holding out hope that that one day I'll be able to get my hands on one. The other that I am following that they're getting prototypes in and they're changing stuff is We Are Rewind. This is a modern cassette player. Nice aluminium, has Bluetooth options. Just a cassette player. In theory, it shouldn't be too expensive. I think it's going to be 89 euros when it releases. Still waiting on that. But Pete, have you got any, maybe something you've kickstarted, or we know you're waiting on the stochastic inspiration rhythm melody generator from OmSonic.
That seems to be going. I've lost I won't say I've lost the faith, but I'm not expecting to see that anytime soon, to be really honest. The only one that I did was the little MIDI MIDI hub with the sequencer in it.
Oh, yeah, that one.
And they did follow through. I mean, that came through. It was, I don't know, 6 months or so, but it did arrive, and still haven't used it.
Well, you haven't got around to doing anything cracking with it, so. In there at some point.
I know.
Anything else on your radar in that kind of category?
No, I tend to. I'm always a bit shy about these crowdfunded things. I do look at them. I mean, the item we spoke about, was it a couple of weeks ago? The three-dimensional sort of holographic screen thing.
Yeah, I can never remember the name of it, but yeah, I remember the thing.
I looked at their Mark II or the Mark III or whatever it is, the current one that you mentioned that you'd seen as well. As I say, I think it was $299, and I thought, well, that's not
for
too
the technology,
much.
That's quite, a really quite, good price.
So I nearly dropped the monies on them for that one. I did think about it. There's a few things I think about, and then I sort of swerve away. Because I would imagine that, you know, quite a few of them follow through to fruition, but there's those famous ones that everyone was all excited about, and they put their money in, and then they sort of go up in a puff of smoke, and they don't get their money back, and...
Lots of scams on there as well.
Well, not necessarily a scam, but they reach their target money. So that means, I think they've got to reach the target, which allows the crowdfunding website to release the funds to them because they've met the target, and that allows them to go forth and do the manufacturing. There was a notable company that were doing micro quadcopters, drones, a few years ago, and it was supposed to do all bits and pieces. And I think they initially released a few, and they didn't live up to expectations, and then it went financially wrong, and there was a lot of disgruntled people that had funded things and not received anything. I mean, I'm sure it happens. And then there's established manufacturers, and they're using the crowdfunding approach by, you know, okay, we've got a new project, but let's get it funded up front, so we know we're going to sell X amount of units. We're going to sell 1,000 units, so we know where we are before we've gone into the production run. So, you know, I can see that being a safer way for them to go forward rather than producing a lot of items and then not selling them.
Yeah, if anybody was listening last week, of course I hope you were, you'll know that I'm in the market for an espresso grinder, and one of the top ones on the list, weirdly, it's been out for maybe a couple of years now, but it's still on Indiegogo for that reason. They just pre-sell them in batches, just the easiest way of as you say, assessing demand, making sure they don't overproduce and keep it going. But the first one on our list of news items today, as far as I know, isn't going to be crowdfunded or anything, but it's definitely in that bit of a wait list category, and I am on the wait list, hopefully early before it blew up, because I did get on this as soon as I saw it reported. But this is the Modern Sounds Pluto. Now, what's interesting is I was trying to pull up the website to have a look at it, and I can't actually... I got three pages into Google and couldn't find what the website is. And worryingly, I mean, Engadget have got their hands on this. Like, there's some... It's getting some big old attention. So if it is another one-person band, it could be tricky to get your hands on.
There is a website, and it's quite comprehensive. I got these details for the show notes directly from the website.
Okay, let's see if I actually find that link, because it is a beautiful
thing. It wasn't easy
thing.
To find. I think I linked from one of the reports. They had a link to the website.
There we go. modernsounds.co.
Yeah, so there's at least four, or maybe even five pages on there.
Totally. I mean, this is a really cool-sounding thing. I posted the main demo to the ModCaf Facebook group. I think the demo is pretty poor, but the sound and the idea behind it, really, really cool. So I advise you to go to the website, modernsounds.co/Pluto, and take a look at it while I shall wax lyrical or lax wirical, I don't really know. But I'm very excited for this thing because it's weird sequences, it's interesting sounds, and a very... left field synthesizer, so it's right up my street. So
it kind of gave me a bit of the Teenage Engineering's about it.
Yeah,
for
I
some
think
reason.
It's that the clean looks, the particular knobs that they're using, and the white, and it has that kind of aesthetic. It looks to be similar to the way Bastille make a lot of their stuff. You know, pretty simple PCB chassis, which as if you've seen the Bastille Castle videos, they've used a tennis racket to smack those things around the room. That means it's going to be durable. Anyway, we've got a digital synthesizer here. 5 channels of modulation, 2 voices, 2 sequencers, a little capacitive 4-note keyboard that you can kind of interact with it using, and, you know, inspired by Easel, some of the old little toy-like Casios, which are quite fun. But it's all about evolving, complex, semi-random sequencing, wavetable oscillators, and some pretty cool sounds. Definitely check out the demo, because the sounds are cool. The walkthrough is pretty dry, but let your imagination run wild. I'm definitely excited about this one. We've got MIDI, we've got sync, we've got CV outs, which is quite nice. You should be able to use those. Some of that sequencing on other things. USB power, so we can battery this one. And I am the excites. One thing that's annoying me, though, is we don't have a price yet, which, as Anthony commented on the post, is it's got patch cables, double that price. I'm worried it'll be quite a chunker.
Do you think it's going to be your teenage engineering pricing?
Not quite. I don't think a one-person band can be quite so arrogant, I hope. But let me see if I can find that post.
I mean, on the website, they are appealing for retailers to contact them. So I was wondering if it's something we should be looking into getting some stock.
Maybe we should, because I want one. But yeah,
well,
that'd
be one way
price.
Of getting one cheaper.
Yeah, definitely. Check out the video, Modern Sounds the Pluto, and join that email list so you can be behind me in the queue. Yeah, that's a cool one. Very the excites on there. Actually, quickly before we jump into the one that you want to really get your teeth into, Pete, a quick one that was on Music Radar is the Orbiter, which is a strange hands-on sequencer. Think record player, turntable. So it's got a platter. And it looks to be belt-driven, this particular prototype. I don't know if it's a prototype or just a render. But it's got this magnetized surface, 4 different coloured plastic discs that you position in various ways. And as they spin underneath this arm that has colour-detecting doodads, you can use it for note and rhythm generation. Just, you know, a different tactile way of sequencing. I think it's going to be very limited and a bit of a novelty, but it's kind of a fun idea. So yeah, Playtronica Orbiter. Have a quick Google, because that looks pretty fun. Away from the synth world to Pete with some studio time.
Oh, I just want to mention one thing before we dive into this next item. After the last week, obviously, we mentioned the unfortunate passing of Wawa Swaiman, which was obviously slightly premature, possibly. I mean, we don't know what the circumstances are, but I noticed there was an immediate effect on the cost of certainly the second-hand Swaiman modules.
Oh, yeah, we were wondering
straight
if that
away.
Happened. How bad were the hikes?
Really eye-watering. I saw someone... I can't remember if it was eBay or on Reverb. Someone was selling the MMF-1, which is the
the
simplest filters that it does or did. And I think they were wanting £1,500 for it.
I mean, they weren't cheap new, but
ridiculous. They were about £900 new.
No thanks. Don't be a scalper. Nobody likes you.
Then I started going through. And also, notably, I've always had the passion for the S1 Mark II.
The big monosynth type thing.
Well, on Schneider's, who sort of had the main relationship with Swaiman, they always said, out of stock waiting for stock. And now it just says, this product is no longer available.
Yeah.
And I went through and that said it on quite a few things. It was
sad
very
news
absolute.
Indeed. Yeah, it was a shame to see the scalping kind of mindset take over there, but it was kind of inevitable, really.
I'm not sure if production is absolutely that's it. It's ceased.
Well, certainly for some time there could be a renaissance, but it's not going to be soon if there is one.
No. So either someone else in the... Because I believe there were other family members involved in production. I mean, I don't know the ins and outs. It was all a bit mysterious anyway.
Part of the allure of the brand, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, certainly. But it'd be nice if there was someone that did continue holding the torch, so to speak, carry on with it. But yes, just alas.
Allay, alas, and alam. That means over to Neve now.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Something that Andy would probably weigh in on if he was here. We miss you, Andy. We need your laugh back. One day we'll get him. In the summer, hopefully.
Yeah, so last week, while I was trying to occupy myself, as one does during these long, tedious winter days and lockdown and bad weather and so forth, I was getting quite excited about Neve equipment, especially as this piece of equipment caught my eye. Which, I mean, superficially, it's not that exciting. It's just a very basic summing mixer. But obviously, having the Neve electronics, it has the ability to add that certain something that you can't quite put your finger on. So I was particularly caught by this because it was such a simple device. So it's the Neve 5057 Orbit, which is a 1U 16-in summing mixer. And there's virtually no controls apart from the red knob and the blue knob.
Yeah.
And
well,
that's
it. Is red knob, and then there's just a little button for... It was... Was it a silk button? I remember looking at it while we were at work.
It's saying the red one controls the silk, and I can't remember what the blue one. The two sort of modes, or you can have a completely transparent. But you know, the whole point of having anything Neve, certainly in this sort of vein, is to get that
not transparency,
get that sort of warm analog coloration that you want to impart onto your mixes and so forth when you're sort of printing to a stereo image.
Totally.
And I thought this would be perfect for myself, but this led me into a whole world of it, just exploring all the other new stuff that I couldn't possibly afford at any stage or under any circumstances. But it's always nice to fantasize about that type of thing. So I was wondering, is there anything in this sort of vein, it doesn't have to be Neve or any other manufacturers, that you contemplate that you know would be nice to have in a kind of a setup, whether that be a simple mixing setup or even a mastering setup?
If we let's call the category the SCS, the source of a certain something, because that's quite fun to say 10 times fast. There's not a massive amount that's really crossed my mind. Certainly nothing seriously, purely because of the horrifying expense. Again, as Andy would say, this one costs 2,000 bones. It's a big old chunk. There's definitely been a consideration of, oh, okay, I take my audio seriously. I do enjoy it. Certain things, like if I was going to upgrade an interface, one option is to go, you know, Universal Audio. It's got great pre's, great converters, all in one box. Or potentially go for a smaller, just a simple converter, and it would give you more scope to choose the juice in a way. So converter, choose a couple of preamps, and then you could have your own headphone amp stage, all this kind of stuff. So the specific bits that have crossed my path, the Rupert Neve Designs DI and headphone amp, I did... this is actually a long time ago, so I can't remember what was involved, but I did watch and download the Audio 4, quite an extensive DI comparison, and the Rupert Neve DI really was noticeably nice. It was the source of a certain something to my ears, so that would lead me to believe the headphone amp might be quite good as well. So those two, the Neve headphone amp and DI, I think that's it, really, that had vaguely, seriously entered the thing. My eyesight, whatever. The only other one, purely because of the similarity to modular, is it would be quite nice to have a little bit of a 500 series rack going. Though I know some people aren't massive fans of 500 series. Something to do with headroom, again, I've not seriously considered too much.
Yeah, I've heard that they can be... slightly underpowered because there's a bit of a compromise because of the nature of the way the rack is set up. But other people have stated that a lot of more current 500 series modules, they've got over that. And they're far better than they used to be. I still like the idea of having sort of individual 19-inch rack examples of whatever. I mean, my concept would be, as I say, have some sort of summing mixer, something like the Neve that we've just discussed, or maybe a Dangerous Music 2 bus or something like that.
Yep, and then find one of those in the Burfield recording studios as well.
Something like some sort of stereo master bus compressor after that. I think that would be it. I don't want to go too mad because I'd still send out to get things mastered. So generally, anyone that you send stuff to wants, you know, a reasonable amount of headroom to work with.
Totally. Now I think about it, you mentioned just 19-inch stuff. Is if I were to improve this vocal chain, already incredibly happy with it, and it has been on the hit list for ages. But beyond that, it would be potentially a nice preamp and compressor. So the LA-2A is often a favourite vocal compressor, and it's been really nice when I've used the Universal Audio plugin version. There is also that Universal Audio 6076, I believe, which is their preamp and an 1176 in one box, that kind of thing. Just kind of manufacture quite a nice front end for the vocal recording stuff. Because as Pete and I were talking about earlier, I do want to start a little bit of voiceover type stuff, which, yes, you can hire me if you would like your voice, my voice rather, on your product. But yeah, it's you know, in with the podcast being really the only regular recording thing that I do, and I really enjoy it, and we take it pretty seriously, and we do, as audio nerds, we love this kind of stuff, so that would be a logical place to actually invest in.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not that enthralled by anything with preamps in it, because that infers a lot of live mic type of recording, which I don't do at all. Everything is being fed in sort of line level from an instrument. So that side of things is not too important. I mean, I could do with upgrade or getting a better ADAT, because I say, although I run an RME, the ADAT I've got is just a Behringer one, which is fine. It gives you sort of another 8 analog interfaces, but the crosstalk is, you know, you get what you pay for. So unfortunately, the RME equivalent, the one I actually need, is substantially more. I think it's going to be somewhere north of a 1,000 just to have 8 more ins and outs.
Yeah,
but it's still something chunk. I might find I have to do, and then potentially I will. I mean, I'm relatively serious about thinking about getting one of these Neve 5057s. As I say, most of the stuff that I actually managed to get finished, and it wasn't really me getting it finished, it was my colleague who does a lot of the actual sort of coal face work, you know, in the door. I'm great at getting ideas together and getting sort of concepts and the instrument sounds and things like that. But the tedious sort of hours and hours of working in the box, in the door, and doing, you know, perfecting everything, getting it right, I find quite grueling, although I should be a bit more disciplined with it. And then our other colleague who did the final mastering and did have quite a nice selection of sort of outboard equipment to do it. Unfortunately, he passed away at the beginning of 2020, unfortunately, very prematurely. Other than knocking a hole in our life with his departure, it's also his contribution as sort of departed, stage left. My colleague, who I work with quite extensively, Mark, is currently taking up the mantle, but he's doing very much everything in the box, so he's using a lot of plugins. So that leads back to that argument that I've heard bandied around quite a lot, which is the argument between plugins and, you know, genuine analog equipment. You know, you've got the people that say, well, you can't beat having proper analog stuff, and then those saying, no, modern plugins are so good you can't tell the difference. And it's a bit of a relatively heated argument.
And this is where we really need Andy to weigh in. He is the jobbing, mastering man among us. We need his brain. Andy, get back here.
I mean, I know that a lot of even top flight producers are working extensively in the box, but every time you see any studio of any worth, there are rack forms of gorgeous, lovely analog equipment. And it's got to be there for a reason, because
definitely,
why would anyone you know, maybe it's just a gas problem. You know, they have the, you know, they can't stop buying it. But I think not. There's got to be something to it. I have to believe, in the same way I believe there's something to as good as digital synths can be these days, but there's nothing like a really good, high-quality analog synth. It's got to be a similar thing with the outboard equipment as well. You know, there's nothing like a really high-quality compressor limiter or channel strip or summing mixer or whatever that, or preamp, or people wouldn't bother making it, and certainly people wouldn't bother buying it if you know, you could just facilitate that with a plug-in at a fraction of the cost.
Yeah, and it's, the annoying thing is it's only a select few that will really have the time to do the comparisons and have the experience to draw on.
I mean, there's a lot of you'll see a lot of people A-Bing them on maybe on YouTube, but how the hell can you tell listening through that compressed audio stream that's coming in with the video?
What's always great is if you do manage to find a demo where they offer downloads for, you know, WAVs and or whatever.
But you really want to hear it on the work that you're producing yourself. You know, you know what you're listening to in that respect. I mean, it and then a lot of times it is so subtle. You know, when it's putting the sort of you know, those slightly, it's just enhancing those tones. It's just producing those sort of very subtle harmonics. It's just very subtle. It's very, I mean, it's just that something you can't, as we said earlier, it's that something you can't quite put your finger on what it's doing, but it's whatever it's doing, it's nice.
The source of a certain something, indeed. Well, from high-flying studio rack space occupying things to Luke's Spacey Bit.
Hello there, space fans, and welcome back to our segment. Today we're going to talk about 2020. Not the elephant in the room, but rather the robots in the sky. 2020 was an excellent year for launching spacecraft to Mars, because it's the point where opposition occurred between the two planets. This is the point where the distance between Earth and Mars is at its shortest in a two-year period. As a result, not one, but three different spacecraft were launched by international space agencies. They are the Emirates Mars Mission, the CNSA Tianwen 1, and NASA JPL's Mars 2020 Perseverance rover. But why was 2020 so important? To understand that, I have to talk a little bit about orbital mechanics. When we launch craft off into space away from the Sun, we need to send them at the most fuel-efficient time. In the case of Mars, this tends to be 2 months before Mars opposition, which is when the Earth catches up to Mars, sitting between it and the Sun, and the three planets align in a row nicely. This period forms the Mars launch window, which happens roughly every 2 years on a fluctuating 16-year-long cycle. Depending on the delta V of your vehicle, it is generally advantageous to shoot your spacecraft before opposition occurs so that the craft does not have to expend as much fuel, slowing down to the relative orbital speed of Mars as it journeys around the Sun. If that makes no sense, then think about the satellites in Earth's orbit. The lower a satellite is, the faster it travels, because it has a shorter distance to cover. The diameter, the literal size of its orbit, is smaller. This is a consequence of physics, of orbital mechanics. The craft has to be going faster in proportion to its lower orbit to maintain its distance from the Earth. As we know, if a craft slows down too much in orbit, it succumbs to the gravity of the planet it's orbiting around and is pulled down to the ground. A craft in a higher orbit, therefore, would be going a little bit slower relative to the craft below it because it requires less energy to counteract gravity as it is further away from the planet. Consequently, its longer orbit is slower and the speed of the craft is relatively reduced. So now let's extrapolate that idea into the next stage and put the Sun at the center of our diagram and Earth and Mars as satellite craft orbiting it. The Earth is closer to the Sun, so its lower orbit takes it zipping around our star, lapping Mars every 780 days. Considering that the Earth is traveling faster around the Sun than Mars, if we shot our spacecraft away from Earth towards Mars to bridge the gap at opposition, it would have a hard time decelerating into Mars's sphere of influence without taking lots and lots of fuel for an ultimately wasteful application. Far better to allow nature to do some of the work for us and allow the craft to catch up to Mars by launching our vehicles ahead of the opposition rather than during, after it, or at some other point in the year. So now we know why so many spacecraft are due to arrive at Mars in February 2021. They were all launched in July 2020, just before opposition occurred. These three craft are catching up to the Red Planet as we speak and will soon begin their final preparations for the next stage of their respective projects. The first is the Emirates Mars mission. This craft contains an orbiter called HOPE, or Al Amal in Arabic. The probe is due to arrive at Mars imminently, and by the time this podcast airs, we'll hopefully know a little more about how its Mars orbital capture rendezvous went, and if the rover is safely in orbit around its destination. HOPE is intended to study Martian weather cycles, both daily and more long-term, tracking variations across the alien globe. It will also help scientists to understand how and why Mars is subliming hydrogen off into the vacuum of space, which may help to explain something of how Mars became the lifeless desert that it is today. China's Tianwen-1 craft was launched by the CNSA shortly after HOPE and is due to arrive around the 10th of February. This craft is an ambitious orbiter and rover combination that will scan Mars using 13 different instruments in a bid to solve similar questions to Perseverance. Is there life on Mars? And if not, was there ever? Tianwen-1, which translates to Questions to Heaven, takes its name from an old Chinese poem and is due to enter Mars orbit before releasing its rover payload for descent. Now, Perseverance we've already covered on the show back when we used to record on a pub terrace. But for those of us who'd like a reminder, Perseverance is the absolutely ludicrous 1-ton, 2.7-meter-wide follow-up to 2011's Curiosity rover. Are NASA and JPL going for a Mars orbit? No, of course not. Just like Curiosity, they've fired Perseverance like a $2.1 billion cannonball at the Red Planet and expect it to enter the frigid atmosphere, aerobrake, deploy the Sky Crane jetpack, and land all in one smooth motion. And this time, they intend to record it in glorious, modern digital video. I cannot wait to see that kick off around the 18th of February. Now, this process is fully automated, so we may not see that footage until a few hours, maybe even a day or two after it's happened, but NASA will be monitoring the telemetry coming back from the rover, so we should have a timely update on how events proceed. We will, of course, report back on how all of these craft fared over the coming days. Though JPL are undoubtedly the rock stars of Mars at this point, I hope that the UAE and China are successful in their endeavours, as they will join the extremely short list of nations and space programmes with operational space tech and spacecraft around the unfriendly and unforgiving Red Planet. But that's it for now. If you enjoyed this segment, we'll be back next week for more space news, following up on the results of some of these incredible projects. Until then, I'll return you to my co-hosts. Stay safe. Bye-bye.
Thank you once again, Luke, for taking us to the stars. And rounding us off on this evening's, or whatever time of day, of course, Ings podcast, it's round to our miscellaneous multimedia recommendation, as it's just going to have to be called that now because I've forgotten that one title that it had that one time. So now, the miscellaneous multimedia recommendation. I've actually got mine ready and prepared, all good to go. I've definitely spoken about my field recording stuff multiple times, and I stumbled upon the best channel I've ever found anywhere. And Pete, even outside of the audio part of this, you will definitely appreciate the visuals too. So, Nomadic Ambience, that's Nomadic Ambience on YouTube. Really, really fantastic channel. I can't believe I've not stumbled across this before. So, it's part appealing to the people that like to grab a really long video of a fire crackling or rain sounds to sleep to, part audio nerdery, because these are all like binaural, and part video nerd. These are all really crisp, stabilized 4K videos with excellent audio, often binaural, and they are a thing of beauty. For example, the first one I found is called Walking in the Rain, Tokyo, Japan. And also Walking in a Heavy Thunderstorm at Night in New York. And they are, what they say on the tin, the multimedia capturing person is, they just walk somewhere and experience some wonderful nature or cityscapes. and they walk quite slowly, and it's a really calming thing to watch. Like I say, really crispy video, really great audio, and some of the environments are just so beautiful. It's really well captured, really enthralling stuff. You've just got to check this out. If you can, if you've got a high enough resolution display of some kind, just really bump up the resolution if you can, get some headphones on, and just lose yourself in it. It's really something else. Nomadic Ambience on YouTube. Favorite channel of the last half year of my time on YouTube, which is unfortunately considerable time. Nomadic Ambience, thank you. It's amazing. What do you got, Pete?
Right, again, it's a YouTube channel. And I'll start off by saying that when I was in my early teens, or that, you know, that sort of time when you start sort of developing that love of music that tends to sort of happen around your early teens. Do you know when you mm-hmm. start, you know, I don't know what it is, whether it sort of comes in with puberty or something, but music suddenly has this, it has a deeper meaning. It touches you in a different way than it did before. It, I don't know, it's hard to put into words.
I know exactly what you mean.
It just grabs you and suddenly you're inspired and you're hearing stuff that you didn't hear before in it, even if it's the same music. Mm. And one of the bands that I was particularly enthralled with in the, I would like to say, mid-70s was a band called Sparks. Are you familiar with them at all?
Passed me by. Not
Sparks
that I was there, but...
were sort of, I would say... possibly glam rock. It's very hard to describe them. I mean, that's the sort of era they were around in, but it's hard to describe. They were so unusual even then, and they're still around now. I think that's almost, I mean, must be getting towards 50 years if they started the sort of early 70s. They're certainly around the mid 70s, and I came across their YouTube channel.
Gotcha.
They're still producing music. And they're still, and there's the, and they've just, someone's just produced a, I don't know if it was in coordination with them, produced a documentary about them.
Oh, cool. So glam rock in era, but what about the sound?
It's very hard to describe. I mean, if I mention the track, you might know one of the tracks, the most famous track, but you most probably not necessarily know
not
it's
know
Spark.
Yeah.
So if I mention the title, This Town Isn't Big Enough for the Both of Us.
Oh, that's going to be the noise everybody in the audience is making. Yeah, totally.
Basically, they're twin brothers, Ron and Russell Mell.
Mm.
But the way they... and I can't remember which one's which, to be honest, even though they look totally different. So one looked a bit like Mark Boland, you know, had that hair and...
Yeah, yeah.
Had those sort of flowing kind of clothes that they wore in that period. And he was the lead singer and jumping around, and he would sing sort of quite a vocal range. There's a lot of falsetto type of stuff he was doing. Not quite Queen-like, but I think there's some of that, an example in that song that I just mentioned. And then his brother, Ron, which I'm now looking on the screen so I know which one's which. Ron, who had the sort of slick back hair and a small kind of almost Hitler-looking moustache. Not quite, but just had that a totally different look. But they are actually twins.
Yeah.
And just so strange. And he would sort of just be sitting at the keyboard, not very unanimated, and look very kind of po-faced into the camera because they were regularly on Top of the Pops because had quite a few chart hits. And that particular song was, I'm not sure if it was a number one, but it was certainly quite a big hit in the 70s. And they had a few others. And I had at least two albums of theirs, and I sort of almost wore them out.
You know,
we're talking about the days of vinyl and cassette, and I think I had them. Certainly had vinyl, and I certainly had cassette, and I think I went quite far to wearing both those mediums out, listening to
Perfect.
These. Most probably over listened, and then I just stopped. You know, just at the end of the 70s, they were almost getting into what would be turned into electronica.
Oh yeah.
And sort of almost danced, sort of EDM very early, and we're talking still late 70s. So they were very. But they are so unique. And as I say, they're still producing. They're both hail from America, obviously being twins, so they both came from the same place. But they've been described as the best British band to come out of America.
Right, okay.
Well, that was one of the descriptions. Yeah. That might have been someone. But yeah, so the documentary, I believe it's called the Sparks Brothers. and it's going to be released, if it hasn't already been released, it's going to be released in 2021, so this year. But as I say, the YouTube channel is just entitled Sparks, and it has quite a selection of esoteric stuff. They're talking about lyrics, they're discussing poetry, they've got just strange animations and other works of art. Obviously, there's a lot of their back catalogue, sort of videos that go all the way back to those sort of heady days of the 70s. Actually, there's a picture of here with Ron playing, and he's got a ARP 2600.
Oh, lovely. All the good
gear.
And that's
got to be circa sort of late 70s, I think, looking at it, because they're looking quite young in that one.
Nice one. Well, Sparks for a bit of music spanning some decades. Nomadic ambience for some relaxation if you need it. As always, thank you so much for listening to Rack Addicts After Hours. It may not be after hours and in the pub like we used to, but we hope that in the future we will return to where we belong. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time.